Hey, this is Casey and Jim from Saturdays with Chicken Doc, and we're on the No Phony Podcast Network.
Cool. That's it? What are we just telling? Are we just telling people that?
Hi. Check us out.
Hi, this is Jim and Casey, and we're on the network.
Oh, man. Check us out on No Phony Podcast Network. I think it's, let's see, nophonynetwork.com.
Hello, this is Bill.
Hello, and welcome to Heroes Garage, where we review and preview movies, TV shows, having to do with science fiction, comic books, and superheroes, and sometimes other things like horror movies. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing good, Tom. How are you?
Good. So, it's a cold, wintry day here in Chicago.
Yeah, how unexpected.
I know.
I was hearing the, you know, the sensationalist, let's call them, and they're saying that usually our official first snowfall doesn't happen to the first week of December. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh no, Armageddon, Snowmageddon, it's coming.
I always get a little confused because I grew up in northern Wisconsin. I know you're happy for me. And the snow came earlier. It feels like once you get north of Eau Claire, it just gets a little colder and the snow comes earlier. So since I've lived in Chicago, I'm like, is it supposed to snow now? Is it supposed to snow in December? When's it supposed to get cold? So today on Heroes Garage, we are going to do a few things. Number one, I want to revisit a storyline, a minor little story arc from Daredevil Season 3, and I want to ask Bill some questions.
Wow. Yep. A little backtracking, let's go back through that door again. I would gladly go through that door, Tom. Lead me, Tom. Lead me through that door.
So that's one door. Door number two. Bill is going to review. It's been more of a brief review of Halloween, the movie that came out a couple of weeks ago.
Right. Yep.
And door number three is a preview of Fantastic Beasts number two.
Wow, we have a packed show, Tom.
Yes, we're going to be work our way through the outline, which is not a tangible outline today. So we'll see how that goes.
It's all in our heads, folks. All in our heads.
Yeah, I'm hoping that mine is at the front of my head, near the frontal lobe. not in the limbic system, where there's no verbal information stored.
Oh, that's too funny.
So, this is the one I want to hit you with, and I'll do a little build-up here, but it won't be long. So, the Frank Miller story arc in the comic book was called Born Again. And in Frank Miller's graphic novel, which people absolutely love, of course, in that story, Karen Page is actually murdered.
Wow.
And
by whom? By whom?
By the Bullseye.
Oh, by Bullseye. All right.
Yeah. So in the Netflix series, they do a little swap-a-roozy. So instead of killing Karen Page, they kill the priest. And
right.
They do it in the church. So in the comic book, that happens very similarly, only Karen Page is killed.
Hmm.
And some people are saying, and I want to talk about this because other podcasts are talking about it, and I just love it. I love doing phantom crossovers.
Hey, I'm there with you, man. I'm there with you.
So there's a famous reporter who was killed in season one. What was his name? Ben?
Yeah.
And in the comic books, he does not die. And he's actually still there. And he's an integral part of Daredevil. And people poo-pooed and didn't like when he died in the Netflix series, in which I don't like that either. Mm-hmm. So this is the big debate, and it's really twofold. So let's start with the Netflix series. Within the context of that story, did you think that how they treated Karen Page, that that fit with the story that they were telling, and that they pretty much needed to stick to the story that they were telling. And then the second part of it, if we remember to come back to it, is like how much violence did they do to the Daredevil character by right. not killing Karen Page? And Karen Page was a huge part of the Daredevil narrative. And when she died, it was a major blow to Daredevil in the books. So,
right. Yeah. I think I'm always of, I think what makes better shows, TVs, et cetera, is the surprise that you kill off somebody who you think is untouchable. Right.
Yeah.
And you're right. I think that if they stuck with the original storyline, man, it would have really given Daredevil a reason to really go after Fisk. Mm-hmm. And other, it would have just ramped it up even further. I think that, you know, it's part of that kind of that TV show mentality where you feel like these are main characters, you need to have them be from beginning to end, and therefore you have to carry them through because you invested so much into it. And that's the key word in all this, is there is a lot of investment into Karen, and she has a lot of screen time, and to, you know, do away with her, I feel is like a unwritten law that's out there of character development and storylines, that you have to have these people there because you spent a lot of time with them.
So I'll play devil's advocate and keep the thought that was in your head, because it could be a good one. Like The Walking Dead, you've watched all 7 or 8 seasons of that.
You know what? I have not. Have not kept up. Yes, but I know where you're going with that. Yes.
Yeah, you know where I'm going. I think
because even though I haven't watched it, and I'm saving for a binge, a holiday binge.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, you'd have to be dead not to realize what they're doing with Rick, right?
Yeah. Isn't that a strength of that series? Like they kill these people. Like, well, you can't kill him. Boop. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it was so funny. It's like, and it's funny you say that, because I was actually thinking that you could always tell that someone was ready to be killed in Walking Dead, because they devoted like an entire episode giving their story,
yeah,
only to just get rid of them.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's because it's to pull at your heartstrings, right?
Yeah.
And I think that they weren't going to do that here. They're going to be safe. And, you know, we already kind of went after how we felt about Karen and her character and how she vacillates through these emotions. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, that's what makes a show greater, when you off a main character that you have put so much into.
Right. So... And then the other half of it is, so we believe that just wasn't brave storytelling, and I agree with you on that.
And let me just put one caveat. And the writers and producers are assuming that we like that character.
So right.
That's why they don't touch it, right?
Okay.
And I want to use the word assuming.
Right. Because, and now the other part of it is the comic book side to it. So I've heard the argument that you didn't, like, the argument goes like this. Well, they didn't really do damage to the Daredevil character by keeping Karen Page around. And the flip side of it is Gwen Stacy, who's the Spider-Man's main squeeze, like when she died, that was like an integral part of Spider-Man's story. But when Daredevil... Right. So when Karen Page dies, it's equivalent to that for Daredevil.
Yeah.
And I don't see that there's, like, I've heard people say, well, Daredevil isn't as popular. I think that's irrelevant. I think we're talking about the importance of Karen Page to Daredevil, not whether that's a popular comic book.
Right.
And then secondly, I think it was a huge part because I think after that, Mark Wade, I mean, Karen Page had died. His city had changed. Things had changed for Daredevil. He ends up moving out to the West Coast for a while. And he operates in the West Coast under the tutelage of Mark Wade, the famous writer. And so I guess the other part of it is, like, I don't think it's just by fans' whim or comic book fans just wanting some real specific thing for this character. I think it's a legitimate discussion point that they changed a major part of the Daredevil narrative by.
Yeah. And it's, you know, sometimes there's what we call, and I call it the purist argument, okay. Right?
Yeah.
And I mean, there was plenty of purist Walking Dead folks that wanted him to follow, you know, verbatim gospel, you know, the what was been written.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't translate well because some actors are going to be doing a better job,
right,
than other actors in their character portrayal, and the audience who is ultimately on TV who are, you know, paying your bills, you know, more.
There you go.
You know, you have to have that. You're going to change gear according to popularity, and you have that purist. And I think that, you know, that's a good point that, you know, the purists have in this. You know, you kill the priest, man, to kill Karen Page would be great because we all feel that she's untouchable. And then to kill an untouchable character, and it sends Matt Murdock into this crazed spree, you know, now it makes more sense of him going in
mm-hmm.
to whip, you know, whooping on Wilson, right?
Right.
And, you know, it just gives it gives so much more, and you could feel the intensity of the character. And I think, yeah, we miss that in the audience because, I mean, think about it. The very ending of Daredevil is like any kind of syndicated TV shows, cheesy, wrap it up in a pretty bow, you know, send off. Which, you know, it would be complicated if you leave these emotions. And, you know, I think it was a bad call. You know, as much as we love Daredevil, you know, we know his love interest is Elektra, ultimately. And we know that she's alive. So, you know, why not kill off Karen Page?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the strongest point that you're making, and I trust your judgment as a film critique, is that the story that they're telling in the Netflix series was weakened by them lacking just not being brave. And brave enough to kill off a real important character, more so than trying to stay with the purist perspective and keeping the storyline from the comic books. It's more so that actually the story suffered.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I understand the priest. I mean, he played a great part of it. You know, there's a lot of some sentimentality to him.
Mm-hmm.
But man, for shock value, for real, you know, point, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes legendary when you do that type of stuff. And you're right. You got to be brave. And I think that everybody assumes that we like Karen a lot. And that's why we don't want to kill her off. And I think that, you know, that's, you know, it's a good point to kind of revisit this because, yeah, think about, you know, now you're moving the Daredevil 3 series into the 10 range.
Right.
You know, and that's a kind of a flip of the switch type of thing.
Yeah. And they had it all set up. It was right there for him, and they decided.
Yeah, it's like he missed and got the priest, and you're kind of like, why did he do that?
I know they. It's like you lay all this groundwork, you make all these great plans, and then at the last second, you decide, no.
it didn't make sense, right?
Yeah, it's
you know, we kind of went with it. It kind of shocked us that he killed the priest rather than her. I guess that did shock us.
Yeah.
but come on, you know.
Yeah, just be a little braver. Okay,
they chickened out.
Yes, they did. But we're not gonna chicken out, because what we're gonna do is we're gonna have Bill talk about a terrifying movie called Halloween.
Yeah, briefly. I mean, Halloween goes all the way back in the mid-70s, right? And I mean, you can't really say that Halloween was officially the first slasher film, because I would say Psycho would be actually considered a slasher film at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Halloween, I guess, then kind of turned horror into a different direction, because, you know, Psycho was psychological and gave you meaning to the killer with a knife, where Halloween definitely changed a genre of horror films to what we call the mad slasher film, right? Mm-hmm. 1978, a whole genre came out of the slasher film. And, you know, just spawned movies and different movies and your Friday the 13th and, you know, different iterations of Michael Myers and all these different films. And I think you can point to Halloween being that. So now fast forward into 2018, 40 years later, you discount all those other ridiculous Halloween movies that have been made.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's what kind of gives you that you know, that comic book feel of how you can just turn the pages, right?
Yeah.
And oh wow, we're okay, all that junk that we've written for the last 40 years, we're gonna start all over again.
Yeah.
And that's what this Halloween was, is now you're picking up with Jamie Lee Curtis 40 years later. Michael Myers is in a prison, and she is, you know, still to this day, 40 years later, completely, you know, paranoid, schizophrenic, and by, you know, every kind of mental condition, her character, Lori. And she just is just, you learn a lot about her, of what she has gone through this episode with Michael Myers. And it's very intriguing. She does such a great job. You know, and you know, that's the hard part with older actresses these days. They really don't get the parts, because it's all about beauty. It's all about sexuality. And Jamie Curtis just turns this movie into something completely different.
So what's the main story beat? This will be a spoiler zone here for anyone listening. Maybe you could just give like three or four pulses, like what the story does.
Well, the story is that Michael Myers is getting transported from one institution to another. He's 40 years older than when he was when he first was in his killing spree. He's in the middle of the transport, and oh my gosh, the bus crashes.
Oh my goodness. Escapes.
There you go.
I can't believe it.
Can you believe it, Tom?
No,
he escaped from a mental institution.
There you go.
And so he slowly comes back into Haddonfield, Illinois, to kill again.
Home of the psycho killer, Illinois.
Yes, yes. And so I don't want to get too much into bits and pieces of the storyline, but you know, that's this is funny. I had genre classes in film school, Tom, and one of them was horror.
There you go.
And yeah, and you know, this was in a time where the slasher film was in its heyday, and you know, there was the psychology of the slasher film. There was no psychology behind it. Let's just put it this way, and. Because he's just a killer with a knife.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the horror of it, is he's just a mindless monster with a knife, killing people indiscriminately with no rhyme or reason.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself was scary, right?
Yeah.
Where a lot of horror was all about meaning. That's what made Psycho so cool, right? Is that he, you know, Anthony Perkins became his mother, and which is just phenomenal. Think about the psychology in 1960, just had to blow people away. So at this time, now it's the slasher. And so this is 40 years later. Michael Myers now is escapes. Everybody's on the lookout. And he starts picking off people one by one as he slowly realizes Jamie Lee Curtis' character, Laurie, is around, and he begins to hunt her down.
Okay.
And it's exciting because she is, you know, paranoid. She's prepared. And she has this character that it's exciting. And she has a daughter and a granddaughter. So, and she lives in this perpetual state that she's been in for 40 years, preparing to eventually kill Michael Myers. And that's what's so cool in this drama, because there's, and anybody who's seen the trailers, maybe seen the movie or not seen the movie, they have a, you know, there's a face off and it's exciting. And, you know, slasher films have kind of gone to, like, with the Saw movies, and now we're in almost a different genre of horror films with your you know, Insidious and all those types, and that's a different type of horror, which I prefer. I'm not a fan of slasher, but I really like this film because of how Jamie Lee's character is against this. She's her daughter has disowned her. Her grandchild is trying to figure out. She's curious. And it's how she could keep her family safe now with Michael Myers loose. And it's exciting. It's really exciting because it still has that mysterious song. I mean, John Carpenter wrote this along with Deborah Hill. And they're the team that wrote the original one. So they came back. And so it's very exciting to have this type of film, you know, coming back and disregarding all the garbage in between. And it makes for a better series.
Yeah, that's good. They needed to resurrect Halloween. I love the original. It's just got this lonely kind of spooky horror to it. So on this particular iteration, the director was David Gordon Green. You mentioned the main writers. There's a couple of others.
Sorry, it was, yeah, there was a lot of others. It was, I'm sorry, yeah, it was Jeff Fradley and Danny McBride.
Okay.
But I know that Carpenter was the executive producer, so it was Deborah Hill, I believe.
Okay.
They had their parts in this. You know, he made tons of money on it. I mean, John Carpenter, think about it, his stamp on the Halloween series, he owned probably all the rights to it.
Yeah, and along with it, you mentioned earlier, Jamie Lee Curtis stars Judy Greer, Andy Matichuk also stars. So
yeah, that's the granddaughter. Yeah,
the granddaughter,
Allison. Yeah,
Allison. Okay, Judy Greer was Karen, and so it's pretty. This is amazing. I mean, I think when you come back to a series that's had so many sequels and reboots and reattempts, and you come up with something really, really good, just hats off. So,
yeah, I mean, it was very suspenseful. It kind of reignited the slasher film, but it wasn't. Yeah, I mean, it was a slasher film. You can't get away from that. But it was good. It was suspenseful. It wasn't. It had more meaning to it, if that makes sense. More definition into the characters. Michael Myers is still Michael Myers. He's this killing teenagers, killing people who's ever in his way. He's a mindless killer. The psychology, you still don't know what makes him kill, even though the psychiatrist is in it. That was kind of the mystery still of 40 years. Nobody figures out why he does what he does. And but it's very suspenseful, very great, very good in the way that Laurie and resurfaces, and Jamie Lee Curtis has come back, and all these other peripheral characters, and the ending is phenomenal. It's very satisfying.
Okay.
And so if you're into any kind of horror film, I didn't want to put any spoilers into it because I think people just have to see it.
Okay. So out of how many bloody knives out of 10 would you give this?
I actually gave it 8.
8. Okay.
Yeah, it's that's high for me for a slasher film because I put Psycho as a 10.
Okay.
And because I like to have my slashers have some meaning and depth and weirdness for them, mm-hmm. of why they do what they do. I mean, that's what makes Silence of the Lambs very unique, mm-hmm. because there's a psychology that's there.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that murderous monsters don't exist. There's always a reason, and it's the figure out part. And I like to have that. And just a monster with a blade doesn't necessarily, you know, want me to have a higher rating. Although for slasher films, this is definitely on par with the original.
Okay. So I will recap and I will read the tea leaves here. To me, the reason why this film is really good, just in listening to Bill, is that because of Jamie Lee Curtis and the backstory they give for her character, they flesh out her trials and tribulations over the years since her first encounter. Michael Myers kind of stays the same, but I wonder if just the backdrop of Jamie Lee Curtis's character is what makes this movie really, really good. And that's, I haven't seen the movie, but I wonder if that's probably a big part of this.
Yeah, you definitely have to see it.
Yeah.
You'd have a good movie, even though it's, like I said, it's a, you know, I know there's people, you know, it got a pretty good rating, I thought, on Rotten Tomatoes, mm-hmm. and I think that I don't understand why some of the criticism I feel is unfair, mm-hmm. maybe because they wanted more Michael Myers, and maybe less, you know, but you have to look at the film holistically, and mm-hmm. you know, fans of horror film, you have to have a kind of step back and understand their story parts that you need to watch rather than just Roman Colosseum brutality.
Right. Yeah. That's funny. So with that in mind, we were going to transition over to a preview of the upcoming Fantastic Beasts Part 2. It's actually titled Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. The director is going to be David Yates. The writer is J.K. Rowling. The stars are Eddie Redmayne, Catherine Waterston, Dan Fogler. And this, I believe that this movie has a lot of weight on its shoulders.
Yeah.
Because the first iteration was, I haven't met anyone yet who liked it.
Isn't that funny? I mean, I look at Rotten Tomatoes, I see the reviews, and people are in the 70s, and I was like, I think it just carries out from the people that do like it, Tom, are nostalgic. Harry Potter fans that want something, you know what I mean?
I think there's more of us that want to like it than actually watched it and liked it.
Yeah,
I really want to like this. Now, a couple of things, maybe high points in this newest iteration. Jude Law is coming in. He's playing Albus Dumbledore. Johnny Depp is playing Gellert Grindelwald. So you have a couple of actors that are, I can't remember. I don't think Jude Law was in the first.
Big names out there.
We got some big names. I mean, some are in trials and tribulations in their lives and haven't made good movies in over a decade, but still a big name, Johnny Depp. But so what do you think, Bill? How can they pull this off to where we're interested?
Well, what's interesting, Tom, about this too, is if you think about the director, David Yates, created the last three films of Harry Potter, okay. The Order of the Phoenix, and then, the Deathly Hallows.
Yeah. That's the final book.
Part, part one and two. So, you know, they brought back one of the most climactic parts of the Harry Potter series, and they brought the director to it just to get that tone and that feeling back. Mm-hmm. And they put a lot into that. So we, the viewer, immediately feels like we're back into that Harry Potter world, right?
Right. Yeah.
So you can tell a lot of effort has been put into the sets, the direction, the actors, yeah. You know, everything on the shell smells and feels like Harry Potter.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of smell and feel there, like with the, I guess they call it the magizoologist Newt. Oh, Scamander, that's kind of the main character here. So this leads to the question. So this is about this Newt and his pursuit of these magical and fantastic beasts and creatures. And right. Harry Potter, what made Harry Potter wonderful were the children. It was the kids. And it was basically a story about growing up, about how different children have different strengths, different weaknesses, different motivations. They're part of different families. They're all kind of with this backdrop, under the palette of magic in this magical school where they're learning more and more. And that there's something about that was amazing. Oh, another one I've forgotten the cast is Ezra Miller. Sorry, guys, I'm all over the place. But I mean, Ezra Miller, his star is rising. He's also in this. And so can this be an interesting film if it's not about children in a magic school?
Right.
I mean, how would they make it interesting? I didn't think the first one was just boring because I don't think anybody really cared what was going on in any of it. Like they didn't give me a reason to care about any of the characters, and it was too long, but go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're onto something. Keep going.
Yeah. It was too long. They didn't create, like, you have to create a dilemma.
Right.
And then you give a little energy and confusion or mystery around it. And then you're pursuing that dilemma. But with that, I really didn't even care about the beast and why you're going after it. There wasn't any particular character in there that I thought, oh, I really want to know more about this character and what's it going to do with this world. And is that because it felt so different than the Harry Potter movies that preceded it? Was it because I didn't read the book? I mean, what do you think?
You know, I think what it is, Tom, and it's interesting. I think they had a lot of plot lines going on at once. Mm-hmm. You had the Muggles, you had Newt, you had Jacob Kowalski, you had the Goldstein sisters, right?
Okay.
And then they had this mysterious Grindwald that everybody's talking about. They had all these different character and plot lines where really, I don't know about you, but I walked in there and I wanted to know about the beast part of the Harry Potter world. I want to know who this mysterious Newt was who introduced magical beast to the magical world and introduced that and how he brought that into the magical world. But, you know, what we got was, you know, a almost like the Grindwald character becomes like a pre-Voldemort character mm-hmm. because you got to have this ultimate villain now. And it's almost as if that J.K. Rowling couldn't write another story outside of Harry Potter without having similar type of villains, even though when you watch this, and I didn't read the book, but when you watch this, it's like you want to get into this magical world, the magical beast, how Newt is trying to bring this into and how he's trying to stay hidden into the Muggles world. And mm-hmm. you know, that is interesting. And the conflict is the Muggle world rather than Grindwald. But, you know, this was a book, right? So it was already written. So that means it's already following a plot line. So the film has to follow that, and it just doesn't make it interesting. It's like a prequel. I know it's setting up itself as a prequel to Voldemort. Like Grindelwald probably inspired Voldemort, right?
Yeah.
And you could see that that's how they're trying to do this tie-in. You know, now we're going to get to see a young Dumbledore, and it's exciting. And so, I think that now we're facing a similar type of clash where it's a Grindelwald clash with Newt and Dumbledore, and you know what I mean? It's almost a repeat without Harry Potter.
Yeah. I don't know that they're doing a great job of establishing what the law and order is in this whole thing, at least for me. Like,
yeah, no.
Now, Grindelwald, he was in the first one.
Right, yeah.
And I forgot, Johnny Depp played Grindelwald in the first one,
too. Yeah, that was the big reveal, remember, at the end? Yeah. He was like, oh, it's Johnny Depp. Oh, there he is. Yay.
So that's nothing new about this one. Jude Law is new, and was Ezra Miller's character in the first one? The Credence Barebone?
I think so, yeah.
He was? Okay.
I want to say yes, but I can do a quick check, but I think so.
So I think what they didn't set up really well was, maybe I get hung up on power sets. Like, what is Newt's relation in this world, and what's his proximity to all the other characters, and where does he rank, and what's his role and goal and everything else? I'm almost like establishing a little bit more of a structure to what's going on in the universe. And maybe maybe that happened. I mean, the thing that I want to be careful here is for people that read the books who are really into it. I mean, there's fanatics in this universe that like none other, really like none other. Like, if you make a good Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling movie, there was a point where it was literally blowing Star Wars out of the water.
Yeah, and I think so.
So if you can get this right, there's a gold mine here. And there's people that are so into that, they're probably cringing right now. They're like, this was so obvious. Everything you're saying was already stated. You know, it's already been told. But I'm just going by my viewer, just watching the movie.
And right, yeah.
I didn't walk away from that with a real good idea of the universe, or really kind of an idea of where they're heading and what's important and why it's important. The emotional investment wasn't really established that well. I like
that. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think that when I remember watching the theater and the beginning of it, I was really into it. And then they muddle around too much into too much into the plot, and it just lost you. Right. Yeah. And it just became a mess, and you walked out of it like really wanting that experience that you felt with Harry Potter, because I read all the books except the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt they did a phenomenal job of translating it to film.
Yeah.
And when I went into it and I saw it, and it felt such a great experience of translation. And that's where I understand how people and purists want to see exactly what they read on film, because that's exciting, right?
Yeah.
It's now it's come to life. Right.
Yeah.
Not just in your brain. Now you see it in your eyes. And I haven't read The Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And this just said, OK, I'm going to experience this first and maybe I'll read it. And I got lost in it. Then it made me interested. And now the next movie's coming out. And I'm like, OK, Jude Law's pain. That would be my draw into this.
Yeah.
You know, is Jude Law playing Dumbledore and seeing Dumbledore young?
Yeah.
That to me is what would carry me interest more than the Beast, more than Johnny Depp, more than Grindelwald. Is I do want to get kind of an interpretation of Dumbledore younger and what kind of wizard it is. So that to me is kind of the saving grace in this whole series. Is that one main character, because outside of that, I just don't care.
Right. I agree with you. And I get, and make no mistake, I'm interested in this film. I mean, I want to see this film opening weekend. So I'm complaining and moaning and groaning here. But, and I am right there with you. I'm very, very interested in Jude Law's character, Dumbledore.
Yeah, isn't that funny, though? I mean, think about it. Is what's carrying over into this movie is a character from the Harry Potter series that really has no setup from the first movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a setup from an entire other series that has you interested because it really failed to keep you interested in the first movie.
Okay.
And now this is going to carry your interest because of the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have a feeling that they're going to find a way to for Dumbledore to infuse a little bit of oomphka into Newt's character. I have that feeling. I think he's going to create the depth that didn't get created in the first film.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to see because I think it's going to fall into the trap of multiple subplots because even right off the bat, you have Grindelwald, you have Newt, now you have Dumbledore. So now you're dealing with... You have three powerful characters in a film that you're going to have to figure out, like, okay, how, you know, and then not, that's not even talking about the Muggles and the romance, right? With Allison and Dan, and Jacob, I'm sorry, Queenie and Jacob. I think they're the love interest. I can't remember. I think it was Queenie and Jacob. And that was cute in the movies. But now that's something else. So now you got four things going on here.
Yeah.
And it just becomes a muddled soup. Oh, I'm just going to use that. I'm going to use it.
We need a little bell. Ding.
Ding. Muddle.
That and dawdle. Like if you, those are your words.
That's my word. I love dawdling. It's dawdling around the storyline. There it goes.
Yeah. So just to kind of put a bow on this, we are definitely looking forward to this movie, but it's not because of the first movie.
That's the synopsis, folks, right there.
We're looking forward to this because of the previous seven books that came out about 12 to 15 years ago now.
Oh, that's so funny.
So, well, any final words of wisdom, Mr. Bill, before we end this episode?
Yes, I don't know, Tom, where you are. I mean, we think about those who actually listen to this podcast, but boy, we could go from Daredevil to Better Call Saul.
Ooh.
Oh my goodness. Just saw the ending of Better Call Saul. So I know we haven't really kept up with every season, but boy, I am such a fan. Such a fan.
Yeah. I'll have to watch the rest of the season.
I can't believe you're actually telling me that right now.
I watched the first five episodes and life got out of control. So now I have to wait until whenever they release it on Netflix to watch the rest of it.
Oh, yeah. I actually bought it and downloaded it and finally finished it. And I have it on my Xbox. I should just give it to you and say, okay, here, this is how you get
it. I'm going to have to invite myself over for a Saul, Better Call Saul viewing party.
There you go. Yeah, it was fun. Fun times. And I also finished The Strain. I've been binging, Tom.
It sounds like it. You're putting me to shame.
I know. You're usually the one. I can't keep up. Adrian told me to get past Strain season 2, which was awful.
Okay.
And that's a graphic models of Guillermo del Toro. And I really liked the first one. The second one was like, the third one really liked, and this last one was phenomenal.
Nice.
And I don't know if we have any Strain fans out there, but it's a good B series type of science fiction that definitely follows like a graphic novel. How's that?
There you go. And where can you find that show?
I believe that was on FX. Although someone might just go and say, no, that's FX or TBS. I think it was FX.
Okay.
And I was watching it through Hulu.
Okay.
And man, I really liked the ending. good job. Season three ending was just really, really good. And yeah, it was a fun B type show that carried a lot of themes. Some of the actors are just phenomenal in it. Some of them are extremely weak, but it's a good binge worthy B type of series.
Yeah. So maybe just to reset the shelf here, it sounds like what we might do is actually head towards Better Call Saul and not actually do what we said we were going to do 5 episodes ago and do a deep dive into Legion.
Oh, we still have to do a deep dive. Oh no, we still have to do a deep dive into Legion.
Okay.
I think I'm going to start tonight. Start season 2 of Legion. Actually,
okay.
Where the wife and I were like, okay, it's Friday, it's cold, it's 20 degrees outside, we have some curry, what are we watching?
Legion season 2.
Legion season 2.
Cool. Well, sir, we have our plate full.
Yes, we are hunkering down for the winter, which means a lot of binging.
Yeah, a lot of binging. So, well, Bill, thank you so much for joining Heroes Garage.
Thank you, Thomas.
And for now and until next time, so long.
See you later, folks.
Hey, this is Leah, and I am one half of the hosting team from Autobiography Book Club, and you are listening to a podcast on the No Phony Podcast Network.
Welcome to Heroes Garage, where we review and talk about superheroes, science fiction, horror, and supernatural topics as they appear in comic books, TV shows, movies, and shows that show up on streaming services. Please go to iTunes and search for us under Heroes Garage, review and rate us. Also look for us on Twitter at Heroes Garage. Or if you like to send emails, heroesgaragetalk@gmail.com.